We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Total Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome first my co-host today, Dr. Cheryl White. You're part of the celebrity thing. Again, my celebrity podcast is ranked number 12, according to FeedSpot, at celebrity podcasts in the world. And you're going to co-host with me today, Dr. Cheryl. We've done some co-hosting of all my other genres of shows, and we're excited about our guests because a big movie coming out. Can't wait to hear about it specifically and Robert's feedback. So go ahead and let us know who your guest is.
Thank you, Neil. Hi, everyone. It is an honor to be able to interview composer Robert Totaris, and excited about your new movie coming out, The Walk. That's just super exciting. We want to hear all about that for sure, and about your composing as well. But can you share with us what brought you to this specific career path?
Oh boy. How long do we have? Thanks for having me, by the way. I've been a musician since I was three. I guess you can say a three-year-old's a musician, I guess, if they end up doing it for everything. So I got launched on the path at three. I started playing piano, piano lessons, that sort of thing. And then at seven, I discovered the guitar and all bets were off. And I didn't ever want to do, there's never been a point in my life since the age of seven where I wanted to do anything else with my life, which is an odd thing. I have two children and I'm like, why don't you have your career set now? But it doesn't usually work that way. I went to a high school performing arts in Philadelphia, went to college for music in New York, had brief flirtation with record labels in New York as well. That didn't quite work out the way I wanted it to at the time, in terms of my rock star dreams and so on and so forth. Left the country for a little while just to find myself, as they used to say. I don't know if they still say that. And then I became a singer-songwriter for a few years. Used to play Borders Books. You remember Borders Books?
Yes.
Used to play them, like I could literally book them from like city to city, state to state, and I could play all over the country and like drive around and play Borders Books. You could make real money at one time doing that. At least it was real money to, a 20 something. And did that for a while and then met an amazing woman and was like, I don't want to travel around the country doing this if I'm, it's that thing of like settling down versus, and how am I going to fit my career in? So I decided to be able to make music from home. And so we moved to Los Angeles and I was like, how about film composing? And I've always been obsessed with television and movies. I think everybody that works in this business at whatever level and whatever job has been obsessed with TV and movies. Yes. And so luckily I was a kid that watched a lot of TV and that actually worked, that turned into something. That's a great
answer. And so what you're saying, TV and movies, I'm going to go with the follow-up. What were your TV and movies growing up?
Oh, let's talk about it, man. I have equal love in my heart for Francis Ford Coppola or Stephen J. Cannell, the creator of the A-Team. I mean, I was really young when the A-Team was on, so it was probably inappropriate for me to be watching it. I love procedurals. I love the premium HBO drama. I've always been that kid. I'd watch Humphrey Bogart movies with my mom or Sidney Poitier movies, so I grew up watching that, or Abbott and Costello as well, even though, that's like 40, 50 years before my time. My mom was obsessed with old stuff. And my grandmother, when we watch all that stuff too. And then my grandmother also watched like Murder, She Wrote. So like, I have a love for that stuff too, man. You can't name something that I can't see an appreciation for on television. I love television.
No, I agree. And I love movies and Netflix. I'm always watching Netflix and Amazon, and that's what I spend my time watching these days. And it's like always when I have certain projects, I wish I could catch up to them, because you're either streaming something or watching another movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's so much stuff out there and available. All right, Dr. Cheryl, next question.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. You're very diversified in your in what you watch. So congratulations on the walk. I was reading very quickly. Did it come out last weekend? Did it debut last weekend?
It actually came out last, yes, it did. It did come out last Friday. So a week ago today. We had the premiere last Thursday. So, you know, sometimes this stuff trips into the, when you're promoting these movies and talking about them, it usually a lot of people do it ahead of time. I actually find that it's been great to do it while it's out mm-hmm. and talk about it, because we had a movie premiere and we had a great response at the premiere and a Q&A that lasted so long that they had to throw us out of the theater. So, so that, I mean, that was really nice, you know, like eventually they were like, well, this theater has to close. So far so good.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about the project? I'm fascinated with a composer who does the music for a movie. That's just so interesting to me. And what it actually means to you to do that kind of work.
So, okay, so The Walk, just briefly about the story, is the story of the Boston busing crisis that happened in the 70s, where they, in an attempt to integrate the schools, they decided to, and this happened all over the country, but Boston was particularly notable because there were riots as a result of it, of some white neighborhoods that didn't want Black kids going to school in their neighborhoods. Wasn't everybody, obviously, that's not how racism works, but it was a loud minority of people. And so it became national news, and it was a really scary thing for the kids who were just trying to live their lives and go to school, whether they were white or Black. And they were like, what is going on? But so the movie follows two families, one Black and one white, a Black child who with a single dad who has to raise her, who is in her senior year and has to go, all of a sudden has to go to a different school, which for any kid can be traumatic, especially in your senior year, gosh. And a white family with a cop who is sort of questioning his own issues with race and his own racism. He's a good guy, but he's obviously had some issues. And so now he's been assigned to protect these Black kids who are being bused into his neighborhood. Meanwhile, his daughter actually is racist, is actively racist, and he's trying to sort of change her heart and trying to figure out his own and deal with this. And it basically, it's a small story. It's not a big sweeping piece on the history of society's ills. You could do that, and it's great. We've had great examples of that. But what's great about The Walk is that, and unique about it, is that it's a small provincial story about two families from two different worlds, and everything's about to roll and get bigger and collide. And so that it's really, really, it's a great story. It's a little story that turns into something huge.
Right. And so Robert, when you talk about your role as a composer, what is that role in putting together the film? Explain what a composer does.
Right. So, the director, you get a copy of the film, you watch it continually. And in my case, I like to watch the film like five or six times before I even meet the director. Like they send it to you now because of digital. And so you really know the film. Then the director would come to my studio and talk to me about what he was seeing for the music and his ideas. And I talked to him about my ideas because I've watched the film so much that I know sort of what to say and what I thought could happen. And it's just a collaborative process. You know, everything in Hollywood, you get so many big names in Hollywood, you know, singular names, but nothing gets made without a bunch of other people. And so as the composer, you know, the director and I are basically going back and forth, trying to figure out what the language of the score is. So like, what are we trying to emotionally represent? And that can take, sometimes it's obvious and evident. And sometimes in the case of The Walk is so unique because it is small. So you don't want the score to overwhelm it. It's not an action movie. No one's in the kind of danger that we think of in movies. It's a different kind of danger and it's a different kind of tragic situation. So you want it to be authentic to what the characters are doing, to what you see on screen. And so a lot of that is a lot of talking about the movie, a lot of trying things and seeing if they work. and, you know, sending music cues to the director, what do you think of this? And them giving you notes and saying, okay, I like this, maybe change this and that sort of thing. Every project's different. Some of them go faster than others. And The Walk was actually pretty fast because we were on a schedule, a tight schedule. And I came in pretty late in the game. But it's incredibly collaborative process, you know, like you're building something together, even though it's his baby, you know, but he's got to relinquish enough control to me to let me find a musical language for the film that works with his vision. But and that sometimes could surprise him and say, oh, I didn't think of that, or oh, that doesn't work. So, and you have to be open to knowing that you're not going to nail it every time.
That music's huge. Think of some of Spike Lee's movies and different things of how basically the music tells the story in so many ways. And I guess every story, the Star Wars, all that. We don't think of that role, Robert. We forget the role for that, right? We think
meanwhile,
magically comes up. Yeah.
Try to play some of those movies dry without music and see where you get, see what you get.
No.
And that is, I can think of only two really big properties in the last 30 or 40 years that have had no music at all. And that's The Sopranos and The Wire. And those are the two of the greatest shows in the history of television. Yeah. So aside from them, you need that. You need that emotional momentum that the score provides. Yeah.
Well, definitely. Let's think about Stranger Things. Without music on that, what would do that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, especially, I watched the last season. I cannot wait to finally the second part comes out July 1st.
My wife is watching the last season right now.
Yeah. I think it's the best season. I'm really my take is like it just the how the storyline goes. But that's the whole thing. But so the composer, you're in the music end. But do you have any of the relationship towards the story and the cut out certain things that might not work with the acting as being the composer?
No, I mean, no one's going to make editing choices based on what I do. Plus, the movie, you usually, I mean, it depends on the project, but let's say for The Walk, it was a locked picture by the time it got to me. So there wasn't going to be a thing of where the director discovers, oh, this doesn't work or this. I mean, maybe there was, but that has nothing to do with me. But I think the idea is, think of an excavation. Think of a story that's been told centuries ago, right? And you find something in the ground, and then, but it's a mess. And it's not a mess, but it's not quite clear what happened here. Or it is clear, but like, it's not, the little parts are missing. And I think what a score does is, it's like clearing off all that stuff on the story to bring out and accentuate the emotional impact of those moments.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that.
See the detail in everything. Could the story exist without the music? Of course. Like, I'm not arrogant enough to think that like I'm the most important part here. But I think it's like anything, you know. Could you make a movie without the editing? Sure. Could you shoot a movie without a director, like a singular voice, like directing it where to go? Sure. Could you make a movie without actors? It's been done. I think all those things, but when you're combining things and everybody has their singular job, without one of those things, it feels incomplete.
Yes.
And so you know, the director co-wrote it with someone, so and then directed it. So it's his vision. Mm-hmm. Or his writer George Powell's vision his co-writer George Powell's vision, but to make that vision complete, to really put the finer touches on it emotionally, you do need the score. That's just mm-hmm. how it works.
I agree. I'm a musician, and I can't imagine being without the music, because it does give that emotional strength, and it just keeps you engaged as you go on and on. So, yeah. Right. Matter of fact, I hope The Walk comes out in my local theater. I'm going to stand up and say, hey, guys, wait for the credits. I want to, I get to talk to the composer. But hey, I'm from a small place. It would be exciting.
Okay. No, that's hopefully it gets a wide enough release that we can get it everywhere. That would be great.
That would be awesome, because I love the topic, number one. But I just want to know if you have, you know, in all of your experiences, what is the most interesting story that's happened to you since you started composing?
Wow.
Tough question. Interesting
story since, I don't know if I have one. If I do, I'm never going to remember it. Because my memory is like, my memory doesn't work when it's being pressured. I'm trying to think. I feel like this whole thing has been an interesting story in that you never forget the first time you hear your music on television or the first time you hear your music in a movie theater. Oh my gosh. And the movie theater thing is unique only in that a movie is an event you go to. And it's like you get out, you get dressed, you get out of the house, you do things, which in today's world is even more compromised. But like, so like, you know, like I got dressed up to go to the premiere and then the music comes up and you're like, and I still get like chills that like, oh, I wrote that like in my t-shirt, like, you know, like drinking coffee, like in the middle of the night or something. And there's a thrill there. But I never forget the first time I heard my music on television. I was in this tiny, tiny, terrible apartment that my wife and I had. And she was pregnant and I had done this job for someone, but didn't have many prospects at the time, but the job had been done a while ago and I had almost forgotten about it. And we were struggling, looking for money and trying to figure out what to do. She was teaching but we were having a child. And so there was a lot going on. Our world was about to change. And we were just flipping the TV. And like, at first I was like, she was like, wait, is that the thing? And I was like, oh my God. Like, and you just, it's coming into your living room and you just feel like, oh, like what I'm doing matters to someone. Someone actually who I don't know heard this piece of music and said, it was a piece of music for a commercial. Said, let's put this in here. We're going to pay for it. We're going to put it on television. It's going to represent, at the time of commercial, our product. And there was just something so unique and special about that that I've never, I remember what I was wearing. I was wearing a pair of gray shorts and a black t-shirt, and a pair of socks. And like, I remember I was sitting on a green couch and with my feet extended and she was sitting in this rocking chair that we had. And I remember that so specifically. I have a few things like that. The first time I got a check that I could live off of, so those are my unique memories where you're like, oh, my work, all this work is paying off. Like my dreams are kind of coming true.
Right. And I would say those things happen for me. One would be when I was a former professional wrestler and I was in a territory in Arkansas, and I go and we're getting ready to watch the show 11:30 at night, cause we taped it. And I see me at the opener and I'm like, wow, that one. And then also driving in the snow when my first show came on the radio and hearing myself on the radio for the first time on a radio station. And it's me. Right. It's like, it happened a few times, but when it was my show, like I co-hosted before, but this was my show.
Right.
I was like, wow, those type of experiences are amazing. And, getting interviewed celebrities like yourself, for sure. So my point is, what do you think you're best known for? What was the biggest project you composed on?
I think I'm most known for two things. One is behind me, there's a poster for a show called Behind Me. There's a poster for a show at Zoom. I should figure out which hand I'm using. It's a show called Cold Justice, which used to be on TNT, but is now on Oxygen. It's produced by Dick Wolf, Law and Order and FBI and all that. And so it's been a real thrill for me to be a small part of that TV family. And Cold Justice has been on for 7 years now, seven, maybe eight years. And we're about to do our 100th episode. I'm writing the music for that probably this week. Wow. And that comes out in September. And it just really impacts people in a way, because the woman who is a lead investigator goes around with her team solving cold case murders, real cold case murders. And when you give the family that kind of closure, it's just, and it's been effective. You can't solve every one, but there's been a number of them that have been solved. We've even gotten a confession on the air before that whole Robert Durst thing ever even happened. And so like, we are sort of the first in that sort of new, there's always been like unsolved mysteries and stuff like true crime stuff, But we were the first, like in 2013, I think, or so. I guess it's been on even longer, because I think 2013 was our first episode. And it just is a special show. When you work in Hollywood, I'm coming to you about The Walk, which is a special project also, because historically it's really significant. But you don't get as much of a chance to do really significant, historically significant stuff or impactful stuff in the real world. You can tell great stories, which do impact the real world because they're about the real world. But I get to actually do stuff where people go out and they get closure out of something, or you know, they find out what happened to their loved ones. And I get to be a small part of that with the music. And that's incredibly special. It just is. And you have to write really authentic music to represent these people. And it's just really, such a unique, special job. I think probably that, and I'm most known for that. And there was a show on a few years ago called Sugar Rush, which was on Netflix, which I did the music for, which a lot of people, it's like a baking show, but everybody's kids watch Sugar Rush. And like, it was just like this great experience.
And check out your IMDb, and maybe other people might say other shows, right? That's for sure.
Yeah. But I think those two are probably so far my biggest ones.
Oh, and it's going to be bigger, and you never know. Do you ever think you'll have an Academy Award ever? You ever think
I gotta say, I try not to think about that, because if I think about it, you'll just think about that forever. You know, I feel like I'd be BSing you if I told you I don't ever think about it. Of course you think about that kind of recognition. To me, that kind of recognition means I get to work more. Like, you know what I mean? That people are going to be like, oh, hire that guy. Because, you know, ultimately, this is my job, and I have two children and a wife and a house and a dog. And so I have to, you know, I have to think about the day-to-day aspect of making a living. So I do think about the glory that would be involved occasionally of winning a big award. But I also think, that'd just be cool because I get more work. And like, because everything is about where's your next job coming from? What's your next job? You know, I think that's the nature of doing anything freelance anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, sure. Now, talk about your project is a question for him, just to give him a little bit of an update of who you are.
One of my questions for you was, are you working on any other exciting new projects? And I have one for you. Oh. No, I wrote a book called Underground Angel, and I would love for it someday to be made into a movie. And it's the life story of a 19th century abolitionist, Laura Haviland from Michigan. Oh. And she was an amazing lady. And just the things that she accomplished in her lifetime were just phenomenal. But most people have never heard of her, don't know who she is.
Yeah.
She worked alongside Frederick Douglass and Sojourner Truth. And she changed the streetcar laws in Washington, D.C. So that blacks and whites could ride together in 1865. She also marched along with the Union Army in the last year of the Civil War, and was a humanitarian, and she got to work with some presidents and Edwin Stanton and Secretary of State. She's a really phenomenal person, and I'm trying to get that message out because I think it's so important today in the world we live in that we know that there are white people that gave their all because they care, you know, and just in the same way as black people give their all because they care, and that we can work together and live together, you know, in our country. So.
Well, I think, you know, historically, I think stuff like that's really important. You know, you have to tell those stories. You have to talk about history, period. You can't shy away from it, whether it's good or bad. I think the great thing about talking about the bad things are you can change the bad things that exist now. I don't quite, other than keeping people, I think there are powers that be that would like to keep people stupid. Right. But other than that, I don't see the reason in not talking about history. And, you know, I just don't see what that sort of that strange movement is, other than subjugating people. Because this informs what we are going to do next. And this shows us, oh, here's where we made mistakes, but here's where we were great. Like, for every terrible, terrible, terrible story, there's smaller stories of greatness, of people doing great things to try to overcome this. And I just, this is what's really important. Like, and as someone who tells stories for a living, or as part of storytelling for a living, that's how you reach people. People understand stories. So you writing this book, or someone else telling stories like this, this is hugely important. I mean, there's no better time right now in terms of the landscape of television than, you know, for stories like that than there ever has been. I mean, there's never been a time better than now for stuff like that, because I think there's a hunger for stories like that. There's a hunger for, you know, which tells you a lot about the climate we're in, because people want stories like that, but maybe some people in charge don't want stories like that. So what does that tell you? Like, the people want something and the people in charge don't. So.
Absolutely. Such good insight. I love your honesty. It's so refreshing.
Exactly. So Robert, where can we connect with you, first of all? And then secondly, where can we watch The Walk?
So The Walk's in theaters now. I'll answer two second question first. The Walk's in theaters now, but it's also on digital and on demand. So I'm sure if you have an on-demand system and you search The Walk, I actually did on my cable and it was there. I think you can get it on Amazon too, as well. I am terrible at social media, but I'm trying to get better. And so I'm on Twitter at Robert Toteris, all one word, .com, and at Robert Toteris at Twitter.com. And I'm on Instagram at Robert_Toteris. You know, my Instagram is like pictures of my studio, pictures of my family, pictures of my dog. So it's like, you know, if you're interested in that, then come on by. Like,
now it's all going to video too, Robert. The best bet is for Instagram is to go straight video. And so with your ability in editing, put some cool music composing with portions of something you could use as a product. Right. And that would be the best way to, because it's all reels. It's all about reels now. I haven't jumped on it. I'm a social media guy. I'm doing it with my clients first, but I'm going to be jumping on it soon. I just got to get back in the saddle. I have so much content. I could be doing reels all day long. It's just about the time, right? Because I have everything I say. Well, we appreciate it, Robert. You were fantastic, and best of luck. And I'll have to check out Cold Justice. Cold Justice is available where? Where is it on?
It's on Oxygen, which is on your cable system. If you don't have cable, you can watch it on oxygen.com or on iTunes, or I think on Amazon as well. But we have a new season coming out in late August, end of the summer. And that'll be our 7th season, I think. I could be wrong about that, but it's rare that you get that opportunity in television to do 100 episodes of anything. So I feel blessed.
The huge
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate you, Robert. Thanks for stopping by. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're watching and listening to the Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.